This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels trading broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.
Hello and welcome to Inside Commodity Futures. My name's Craig Turner, author of Turner's Take and a broker here at Daniels Trading. And joined with me today, back from being out last week, is John Payne, author of This Week in Grain. Broker here at Daniels Trading, and also congratulations to John and his family.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm now one kid heavier now, so got two. Chasing on Craig. Craig's got four.
Yeah.
He knows this. So he's a better man than myself at this point.
It's early on for John. Can rack him up.
Trying to catch up. But it didn't look like I missed much. You know, I saw we were down a little bit early last week. Soft prices, but... You know, I come back Monday, and it's basically, wake me up when the report happens, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You did not miss much, John, especially with the grain markets. Not a whole lot went on. A lot of us, I'd say since late last week and now early this week, you see a lot of talks about two things. One, the WASDE on Friday, and the other, these crop tours that are going around. The country. So for, the numbers that came out for the WASDE, they're looking for yields in corn around 170, a little bit north of that, and the soybean yield was, I think, about 47.6 was kind of the industry average. I don't know. I don't think there are going to be a lot of big surprises on the WASDE. It'll be interesting to see where they think how big this crop is. On the corn side, on the soybean side, the one thing I'm really interested to see, other than where they're going to peg production and how big they think the crop's going to be, is those exports. The thing that I've seen on the estimates from different analysts and also our numbers is that, I think we're a little bit more bullish thinking that the USDA is going to bump that export number up, 50 million bushels. I've seen some say, 80 million bushels that they're expecting old crop exports to raise in soybeans. And
sure.
50 to 80 million bushels in old crop beans, taking that out of the stocks, it was a big deal. Obviously, though, it could also be easily offset if the USDA surprises, even more to the upside, in terms of production. So I don't know. That is the for new crops. So that is the one thing I will be keeping an eye on. And I know that's been the chatter. For corn, these corn seems like it wants to hold this low 330 as we head into the report, and then we'll see. The USDA will tell us basically how much they're going to change this crop, because I would think that the USDA does bump up the yield from trendline.
You would think they would. I mean, if they're going to do crop progress numbers as good as they've been doing them, you should see it reflected. Although I haven't seen much data on how much they've normally changed, but did go back to last year and just looked at kind of the Twitter feeds, and it's almost the exact opposite. Where there was a big debate about how poor the crop was doing, and ended up finishing really strong. So, I think whatever they come out with, I think they'll be conservative. You have Landworth come on today at 166, which kind of surprised the trade a little bit, but it doesn't really feel like the cash market's given us any love either. So shorter term here, it's about week basis, and essentially the amount of corn that's around, especially out in the more western corn belt. But boy, once you get past the harvest, it's hard for me to look at what's going on in Brazil, who got another crop downgrade by their CONAB this week on the corn side and a little bit on soybean side, and not think that we're going to have better days in the markets. But just the timing of it's going
to
be difficult.
Right, and I want to get to that in a second. But right before you brought that up, you were talking a little about cash prices, and me and you were talking a little bit before we came on about cash. Do you want to go over what's going on in the cash market a little bit,
what
we've been seeing? Yeah.
Absolutely. So for the longest time, I mean, we were U.S. wheat and really U.S. corn. I mean, we were more expensive than a lot of the foreign competitors of ours, and that was certainly one reason why prices really weren't getting any upside price action. But that has completely changed. So just going home today, and if you've kind of followed Craig and I on our newsletters, you probably know about the French wheat story. They've taken a pretty good write down on yield so far. So their wheat has spiked in price. Now they're trading around 195 per metric ton off the port. Russia, which has a really good crop, they've had some improvements in yield in the last couple of weeks. They're trading at 170 per ton. Russian feed wheat, that's a downgraded wheat, is trading at 162 a ton. And then you bring in the U.S. products at 171 a ton and 158 a ton, corn and soft wheat. So essentially, you know, the U.S. products are back to being the cheapest on the street. And, you know, I would expect you're going to see the export numbers reflect that as we go forward here into the fall, which normally isn't the case. Normally you see this time of the year the Brazilian and the South American competitors on the corn side really pick up the export mantle as we, you know, wrap up our crop product. But we're not seeing that. And, you know, I think you know, we're seeing this slowly the wheat train start to build on the export side. The problem is we have so much around in the short term that nobody really wants to come out of those entrenched short positions. But it's a matter of time, in my opinion. It's not an if. I'm not saying that we're going to go up tomorrow. I just think, you know, we're essentially looking at the net spec position of just being really, really short to the Chicago wheat market, and then pretty, you know, close to historically short the corn markets. It's just waiting for that story, and then that could take 6 months. So it's very frustrating. I think a lot of the longs who have rebought wheat after the harvest, seeing this September delivery kind of come and go without much price action is a little disheartening.
Yeah. You know, and just to reiterate a couple of things you said there, you know, for a long time we've seen the prices come down for the U.S. because of the strong dollar, and we weren't exporting much, which is a big part of the demand. And what John was saying is that, you know, corn per ton is 171. And the soft wheat out of Toledo right now is at 158. So that's the best deal in town around the world. You can get, you know, basically soft red winter wheat out of for delivery, and, you know, out of the Toledo port. And what we've seen in the wheat spreads is the wheat spreads have reversed a little bit. You know, we've actually heard stories of you know, some of the warehouses, like some of these big companies that own the warehouses that are also the elevators, also physically own some wheat. It's kind of it's kind of part of it. And some of those big players have actually taken some of that wheat off the market or out of the exchanges because they could get better prices for it in the cash market than have it at the exchange. You know, if the futures market is discounted enough against cash, what happens is you have an incentive to take delivery of the wheat in the futures market and then sell the cash at a higher price. So if you actually physically, you know, have the wheat at the exchange, you have the receipts, you know, and you say to yourself, well, I can let my wheat go out to delivery, or I can just take it back from the warehouse and the exchange and sell it on the cash market, I think, you know, we'll do that. And I think that's why we've seen the registered wheat at the exchanges come down, because a lot of the big houses realize that I can just get a better price for it in the cash market, or there's actual demand for it on the cash market now with wheat being low. So it's been a long time. I mean, a couple of weeks ago when we were around $4 September corn, John, I think that was like multi-year lows, wasn't it?
For sep wheat,
we were around $4. Yes, yeah. Corn, $4 would be a gift.
We're back like sub-2006 prices.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's important too. It's not an apples to apples, so this isn't by any means that the price can rally. I think it's important that anything I say on this net open interest is relative to that. But the last time we were trading at these levels in the mid-2000s, we actually had a long spec position.
Right.
Of like 50,000 contracts. Well, now we have a net short of 129, I think was the number last
Tuesday. Big.
So,
not as big.
So, you know, you're kind of like, it's, what's the true value if you take all the speculation out of it? I mean, maybe you throw in out of $5, $5.50 level. What's going to make it move there is just, you know, a couple of things. One would be maybe a real low planted acreage number, weather problems, obviously, but maybe an uptick in global demand would be needed to be seen. I don't know. I think we've seen some stories the last couple of days that I thought the one you mentioned before was would have been one that I thought would have maybe jumped the market, but it didn't. It's trading sideways here. So I don't know. There doesn't seem to be an incentive to buy anything right now.
I'll tell you what, though. When you look at September wheat, the Chicago contract, and we closed today around 420, you know, the 20-day, this is the first day we've closed above the 20-day moving average since June, you know, mid-June,
yeah.
I want to say, or maybe even go back to early June. So, you know, the fact that, you know, we've made one small step in the technicals to actually close above the 20-day moving average is one thing. The spreads have moved a little bit. I'll say this, though, too. You know, the U.S. dollar is still relatively high, you know, compared to where it's been for the past couple of years. So the fact that, and, you know, if the market starts pricing in something where, you know what, let's say no one believes anymore that the Fed is going to raise interest rates at all, which, honestly, with the election coming up and the way the economy is, I don't know. You can make a case that the Fed might keep on punting for a while now. And if the market starts pricing that in, dollar can come down. So not only is, you know, and if the dollar comes down, it's just going to make our wheat to foreign buyers even cheaper, right? So we'll even see some more export demand. So there, I know for a lot of wheat farmers or even the long side of the spec trade, it's been kind of frustrating, but it just seems like now, and there's a lot more potential bullish cards in the deck for wheat than there were three or six months ago. I mean, it seems like longer term looks like a brighter picture than it was, or at least it's not bleak. It's not, maybe September wheat trading at $4, you know, that could be, I don't know. That's a level I'm seeing, you know, to see if that really holds.
Sure. No, I agree. I don't think you're going to see a lot of guys out, you know, risking the farm to sell $4 wheat.
Right, who's going to sell it?
What's the incentive here? That's just as somebody who likes to follow this pricing and predict them, it's that's something that certainly has my red flag. The other thing, too, I would, on the corn side, and I think this needs to be maybe a little bit paired off, you kind of know a little bit about the currency markets. Brazil is obviously the Olympics going on right now, and they have seen a real tear of their currency from almost 4-1 versus the dollar to now almost 3-1. So that's just in the last 3 months. And I think you could make the case, and you tend to see this after you see a country have a big event like the Olympics, that the currency tends to get whacked. And if that would fall apart, you know, the prices domestically in country there could spike. And that could put a little pressure. And they're right now looking to approve a GMO wheat import. Licenses down in Brazil is something they've never really done before. So I think the cards are kind of being stacked, so to speak, that you know, you could see some further demand come into the market that I don't think is being priced in right now. And we're all talking supply. You and I, you know, we've been talking about this, like, what's the yield? Well, you know, the market, I think, is basically priced the yield in is somewhere in the 170s. I don't, you know, you want to talk 174, 173. At this point, it doesn't really matter. I think it's now prove it time. And the last couple of years, we've seen the market go into these August and September reports the other way, where we've had kind of a tough growing season or certain areas being wet or too dry. And then we kind of shake it all out, and it comes back towards trend towards the end of the year. I think we could see the same type of price action here where, you know, It just maybe the crop doesn't finish well, or, you know, the test weights are low or something like that, and we kind of come back to trend. I think in that case, maybe the market is 20, 30 cents, 40 cents too low. And I've been saying this to producers I work with, the decision is going to be difficult at 380. If you get back to your break-even price, what do you do there? That is really the key. So for me, I would get yourself set up, you know, maybe buy some cheap call options or something along the lines that'll help make that decision a little bit easier.
Right.
So when the run happens and the short covering happens, if it does happen, it's going to be a difficult sale. It'll be just as tough as it was when it was at 420 and you didn't do anything, or 450 and you didn't do anything. I mean, it's you know, the market could snap back easily and trade right back to the mean, and that mean, you know, sits right around 380, which is really where we've been the last 3 years.
Yeah, absolutely, and you make a good point there. I mean, for either producers listening to this, or, you know, if you're non-producer, you're just kind of wondering what that strategy is all about, you know, when you hold a physical grain and, you know, you get a 50-cent rally or a dollar rally, you don't know how much farther that can go, right? It could go another 50 cents. It could go another dollar. If that's your big payday for the year, you don't want to miss out. Causes a lot of uncertainty and anxiety, especially when the market rallies like that, because if you do get a market rally like that, everything is so fast, right? And so a lot of guys will do this time of year is buy, you know, calls maybe 50 cents out of the money. If soybeans, maybe $1, $1.50 out of the money, which are cheap right now. I mean, you can imagine that they don't cost much. And the reason why they do that is if, let's say, soybeans go up $1 or wheat goes up 50 cents or corn's up 50 cents or 75 cents and they have to make a decision to actually sell their cash, you know, their actual crops, at least they have this cheap, you know, call they bought a long time ago that's now close to the money. So if the market does keep on going up, they sell their cash, they have this call and can still participate, you know, in the market. And, you know, and if nothing happens over the next couple of months and corn never goes up, who knows, maybe that call or whatever cost a couple of cents, you know, and it expires worthless. Sure. But it does help. I've found for the farmers I work with, it does help them. It does help them make the decision if they know they – because a lot of guys will tell you they sometimes miss out on these rallies and they don't sell. And sometimes having that cheap call that they bought a couple of months ago just in case we had a summer rally or something happened in South America, it's there to make that decision easier.
Yeah, and it's gosh, I mean, it wasn't that long ago. We were in the high, you know, mid-fours. Mm-hmm. And, you know, nobody sees this. Just same, and it's the same thing on the other side of the coin now. It's, we're down here at three. Everybody's talking about huge yields and this huge carryover that's going to be on hand. But, you know, you and I have seen this a lot where the story can change and it flips on a dime. And then all of a sudden the supplies don't matter anymore. And it's about, you know, whatever's going to come down the pipeline that's moving price next. And I just would look at where the money flow is, which is very negative. And then you've got the kind of outlook for supply, which is very, very positive. So you kind of have two certainties, I think, that have kind of priced themselves into the market. And anytime I see certainty priced into the market, there is an arbitrage there if that certainty wouldn't come to fruition. So a lot of opportunity here. I think this is where having a hedge account really helps. Not so much on the downside here. I don't feel that's maybe a good use of it at this point. Much more upside on the call side. And I personally, this isn't a wreck, but I would look at time. I think, you know, give yourself some time here because there's a lot of physical bushels that would need to move between now and, say, October 1st.
Yeah. No, it's a good point. And, you know, you're talking about, you know, the market right now doesn't care about some of these, you know, demand or, you know, demand issues that may come up later. You know, it's all about supply right now. I think Andy Daniels, the owner and founder of this firm, always used to say, you know, when he viewed the grain markets, you know, it was always about catalysts. Like, what are the catalysts that could come up, whether they come up or not? I would actually add to that, it's not just about catalysts, it's about the narrative. So, like, you know, right now the narrative in the grain market is supply and how big this crop can get up. And then the catalysts are going to be basically the crop tours and the WASDE, the USDA reports. Yep. But you're right, you know, when they find out, one, me and John, it isn't all just great yield reports out there, by the way. It's not every analyst is saying we're going to have a record crop. There are people that are, you know, kind of warning everyone, hey, this might not be as good as you think it is. So we'll see, you know, if they're right. But as soon as we turn into like, okay, well, the story's not of what's made, and becomes, we start going to more demand story, and the narrative switches from supply to demand, which it typically does once we get into harvest or a little bit past harvest, and then the catalyst could become what's going on in Brazil, what's going on with the dollar, and how competitively priced our export, our product is for export. So something that I'm pretty sure I'm going to be writing about, and John and, you know, I will be talking about as we go forward and that transition happens.
Yeah, and this is you know, a lot of opportunities that I think we get to the end of the quarter here. So if you have any questions, reach out to Craig or myself. Happy to talk to you, and analyze your own situation, and make sure it benefits you knowing what's going on. So at this point, I think, you know, any catalysts you're looking for, I think we've kind of mentioned it would be the WASDE this week. Mm-hmm. Anything else coming down the pipe that we're kind of missing here?
I think it's the WASDE, and the next thing is going to be right after the WASDE come up, we're going to start hearing more reports out of the field about yields. It's not going to be any more estimates. It's going to be – we're going to start actually seeing some, like, real numbers, and that's going to be interesting because we've seen in the past where it's like the crop looked great, and then they get in there and they're like, oh – you know, it looked great, but it, you know, but the actual yields when it gets nitty gritty aren't as good, or the opposite. And then it can happen. We've seen it happen in the past. So that'll be, you know, the confirmation of the yield reports actually coming out of the field will be the next catalyst. You know, other than the grain markets, I would keep an eye. You know, I do write about the energies and livestock. Natural gas, if you have any exposure to natural gas, looks like we've just broke support. December natural gas is low of the 20 and the 50 now, approaching the 100-day. So it looks like technically natural gas is turning around. And also crude oil today tried, after coming down so much, based from 50 to 39, tried a rally, rallied for a few days, got back to the 50 and the 20-day moving averages these past three sessions and failed and is now down over a dollar. So I don't know. Energy prices might be coming down. That could weigh a little bit on the grains too.
Sure.
Yep.
Well,
got it.
Well, by this time next week, we'll at least have some idea of what the USDA is thinking, and I think that takes some pressure off the trade. So, like I said, going in, the trade is very short, you know, short biased would be, the, I guess, the way to describe it, and now it's prove it, you know. So that can be an opportunity for the bulls. I certainly think that's where the risk is, at least to the upside at this point where prices are. And like I said, the question will be, what are you going to do when it goes, if it goes to 380, 390, and you've got physical grain to sell off the combine? That is the decision that you need to prepare yourself for.
Yep, absolutely. All righty, you got anything else, John?
No, that's it. Get home and feed my kid.
Yeah, well, congratulations. We're all very happy for you, and we'll talk again next week.
All right, you have a good one.
All right, John, bye.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels trading broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore, investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.